You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I am your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm delighted to welcome Jay Widener back to the show. Jay is a renowned author, filmmaker, and hermetic scholar, considered to be a modern-day Indiana Jones for his ongoing worldwide quests to find clues to mankind's spiritual destiny via ancient societies and artifacts. His body of work offers great insight into the circumstances that have led to the current global crisis. He is the producer of the documentary films 2012 The Odyssey, its sequel, Time Wave 2013, and many others. We'll be talking about his latest documentary, Infinity, The Ultimate Trip. In this journey beyond death, notables such as Danion Brinkley, Stanislav Grof, Neil Donald Walsh, and many others discuss the most important questions that face mankind. What happens after we pass from this world? Is there a life after this one? And what happens to those who have had a NDE or near-death experience? Jay's recent film explores these questions and is part of his ongoing series called Sacred Mystery Cinema. Be sure to explore Jay's website at www.jaywidener.com or www.sacredmysterycinema.com to discover more. In the meantime, we've got the real Jay, so let's get him on the show now. Hi, Jay. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, Lance. How are you?
Good. Well, I just love your film. You know, it's just a wonderful piece of work, and I'm always amazed at how you just create such a magnificent body of work. So I just want to thank you for making this film.
Oh, well, you're welcome. It was probably one of the harder films I've ever made. It took almost 3 years to make it, and if it hadn't been for divine intervention, I don't think it would have been as good as it is.
Did you have any idea where the film would go before you made it, or did it evolve as, obviously it did, and there were some clear moments of divine intervention that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I mean, what happened was it started actually in 2002 when my mom died, and I couldn't really tell her. I thought I was going to be able to tell her about death and hyperdimensional physics, and you don't really die, and your body's going to fold up into a two-dimensional shell and go back up into the higher realms, and I had it all figured out, but when I told her, she looked at me like I was completely out of my mind, which is not an unusual thing for my mom to have done to me. And so because she was the Irish Catholic, she was filled with the kind of fear that they instill with their teachings. And so she went to her death, to her dying day, terrified of everything. And it was awful. It was just awful. And I was talking to Alberto Villoldo over dinner one night and telling him about how helpless I felt. And he told me a similar story about his father dying and how helpless he felt. And I said, well, we should try to do something. And then he said, well, let's make a film that will teach people not to be afraid about death. And I thought, yeah, that's a great idea. And so we just picked some people to interview. Danion Brinkley was the first one, and then, you know, slowly different people came in. And in about a year before the film was released, I edited a version of it, and it was the most boring, clinical, terrible film I'd ever seen. And I was like, oh, my God, this is awful. Nobody will watch this. And I didn't really know what to do. And I was actually kind of went into a mini depression because I really didn't want to release it. And then my friend Rick Levine came to visit us, And we were out to dinner again, and he started telling us about this lady that he met up in Seattle, this old lady who had these incredible stories about the Holocaust and all this. And I said, really? And he said, yeah, she's incredible. So he gave me her name, and I contacted her. Her name was Renata Dollinger. And I drove up to Seattle and interviewed her, and she was absolutely just jaw-droppingly great.
Oh, yeah.
Lucid 88-year-old woman I'd ever known.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I said, my God, that was a good interview. That helped.
Oh, yeah.
And then I got back, and Neil Donald Walsh had found out that we were making this film, and he kind of insisted that he wanted to be in it. And no one had ever really insisted, you know, like that. So I said, okay, he's a big shot. You know, I'll go interview him. Maybe he's got something to say.
Yeah.
And he was pretty good.
Yeah.
And then I realized that I had to change it from a clinical view of death and use stories to tell the narrative of the film, using Neil and Renata's stories. And then I went out and reshot a bunch of other people who were telling stories, like Alberto. I reshot him and had him tell us his story of his and near-death experience. And then the movie began to take shape and became more of a story and less of a kind of a clinical observation of life and death and all that. And that's what saved it. And so, you know, I don't know if it was divine intervention, but it was certainly synchronistic intervention. And so, you know, the movie just won Best Film at the Cover Awards, which is the industry, new age kind of industry awards, and we'll probably win a few more awards, and it's gotten nothing but good reviews, and I'm just really happy. And I knew it might succeed because when I finished my first edit, Sharon's mom, my wife's mom, came to visit, and she was, you know, in her 80s, not really much of a believer in anything. And I said, would you watch this film and tell me what you think? And she watched it, and she was in tears. And said it was a great film, and she actually wasn't afraid of death anymore. And so that made me feel really good. I, you know, that was what I was trying to do. I have a subversive intention also in making the film, in that I know the powers that be are using fear, and mostly the fear of death, to get what they want. And so I thought maybe if I could convince people that there is nothing to be afraid of, that they would be more willing to stand up to the powers that be and say, listen, we're done with your crap. And maybe that'll happen, maybe it won't, but it was a last shot in the dark to try to convince people that there's really nothing to be afraid of, and that if we stand up for ourselves against people who are telling us to do things we don't like and we think are wrong, even if they kill us, we're not really going to die. And I think so there was a revolutionary intent also, I guess.
Well, I got that, and I'm in complete alignment with that intention, being somewhat similar in my processes, whatever those are.
Yeah.
So, yes, I am total accord with that one. And one of the other interesting ideas that is kind of subversive is that there is no getting out of death. I think it was Alberto that talks about that.
Yeah.
And our actions have consequences that there were so many gems in there, and Renato, my God, she would be worth it just to watch her by herself. She was so charming and delightful, I mean, I can't say enough good things about this film.
Yeah, well, thank you. And yeah, you know, one of my favorite lines is Robert Thurman says near the end of the film that, you know, he twists Jim Morrison's famous line back on itself and says, no one gets out of here dead, you know, which I love, you know, it just cracked me up.
Yeah.
And it's actually, it's true.
Yeah.
If you think that you're going to get out of here doing a lot of really terrible things to people and you're just going to die and
right.
it's going to be over, you're in for a very serious lesson when
Absolutely.
You take your last breath.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, And one of the things that people in the religion seem to be focusing on is that they're just going to be lifted up or in some kind of rapture, and all the rest of us, the unchosen people, of course,
yes.
that's anybody who doesn't believe what they believe,
yeah.
are just going to go in hell in a handbasket.
Yeah.
So, you know, your film clearly pokes some major holes in those sacred cows.
Oh, it does. And, you know, one of my favorite things, one of the things that I discovered doing the film, which I thought was just really cool, is the past life review. And,
yes.
you know, this kind of going backwards through your life.
Oh, yeah.
And looking at what you've done. And Danion, he brings up this whole idea that you don't only, not only, go back and live your life, which has to be rather embarrassing for most people, especially when you're young and all the stupid things that people
oh,
do
yeah.
when they're young.
Yeah.
But his whole idea that you actually live the lives of the people that you affected, whether you hurt them or you helped them.
Yep.
And so you can imagine hurting someone seriously, you know, intentionally, and then having to live through their horror and pain that you caused.
Oh, yeah.
And but there's a flip side, of course, is that you're helping a lot of people also, and so you don't know who you're helping either in life, and how many times you gave encouragement or helped someone out. And so there's that aspect too. And according to him, it's the biggest surprise is how many people you find out in your past life review, how many people you helped unknowingly mm-hmm. in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was pretty cool. And so now I kind of go out of my way to help people even more than I ever did, because I'm trying to construct the best past life review I can have with the meager amount of time I've got left. So it just pays to be just a little bit nicer to people, to thank people a little more sincerely, to help people out maybe, and if you're not going to do it because it's the right thing to do, then do it because it'll help you have a much more enjoyable life review after you die. And
yeah.
If that's your reason, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, me too. Daniel's really a cool guy. I had him on the show a couple years ago, and I was into my near-death experience kick. And I had a few others that, you know, were pretty known. But I like what he says, because it's so, he's like every man, you know.
He is.
He really just is the nitty-gritty. He tells it like it is. He is so down to earth. And he calls that the panoramic life review, because
yes.
You can probably elaborate on this better than I can, but it's seeing it from your own personal viewpoint and from the viewpoint of those who are experiencing the result of your actions. And then there's an omniscient view, which is not necessarily a godly view, but it's just a view from overall. So you're actually seeing this from three different perspectives simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And all the people that I've talked to or studied or read about all say the same thing, that there is this life review. So this is a really important tool that we can use and be aware of to help make course corrections, as you said, before we get to the point where it's too late.
Well, you know, and it's always too late if you think about it, because
right.
you don't know when you're going to die.
Right.
So, you know, so you
right.
might as well start now. I mean,
right.
don't
right.
wait. Don't say, well, next week I'm going to try to be better.
Right.
That's not going to cut it, you know.
Right.
In fact, you may be tempting the universe to get rid of you now.
Right, that's right. That's right.
So, you know, just go and do it. And if you do it, you know, you're going to be really surprised, because there is a kind of a strange immediate gratification in it, and even if you're doing it just to have a better life review, it's still the right thing to do. And that's another thing that we all need to do, is realize that we're all equal when we die. You know, the poor, the rich, the
yeah.
elites, everybody's equal when they die. So no matter what kind of injustices are going on in this world, and there's plenty of them,
mm-hmm.
You know, in the end, there is a kind of a creative justice and it's meted out. And if people who screwed people badly in their life, if they've got to go through the suffering, imagine the bankers that are foreclosing on thousands of poor people. Imagine their life review where they have to live those lives and the poverty that they put down on people. You know, so, you know, there is a justice, a kind of a strange justice here, and I think that's really encouraging. And so, I, you know, I came away from it even more emboldened about life and who we are as a species. And, you know, we may be facing a kind of, well, we are facing a huge catastrophe right now. And a lot of people are not going to make it because of the economy. They're cutting off the unemployment now, and people are really, really going to start hurting now. We've been able to keep the unemployment going for two or three years now, but now it's running out, and we're going to have a lot of homeless people appearing suddenly in this country, and we're going to have to come to grips with who we really are. And if we approach it from the viewpoint, well, those people are damned and they've screwed their lives up and we don't need to help them, well, that doesn't say much about us as a people. And I think we have to understand that there is no death, but there is a justice at the end of death, and you better get ready for it, and you better start living your life right and start living it right now, and don't wait, because it's not going to wait for you. And things are going to get very, very, very touchy in this country in the next few months and years, and I think we need to be wholly prepared for what's about to happen, which is another reason that I made the film, was because I knew that the world was going to fall apart while I was making the film, although it hadn't fallen apart while I was making it. I knew it was coming, and I wanted people to be fearless. And that's what I want more than anything else out of the film. It's for a kind of fearless warrior to arise up right now and take back what is rightfully ours, which is our country. And and I think, you know, I think we're in a pre-revolutionary moment right now in America. That's a very dangerous place to be because it could go any direction. And so maybe if we approach the coming changes with a fearless warrior heart, we can straighten the situation out to our benefit without a lot of killing and bloodshed. And that's really something I really hope happens. I hope there's a revolution, but I hope it's a bloodless revolution and a velvet revolution. And the odds are not with us.
Well, you know, it seems like all these changes have been postponed exponentially. So, you know, people like your friend Cliff High, and you know, he's been on my show a few times. I love Cliff.
Yeah,
talks about the various things that are coming in the November events. And you were a good friend of Terrence McKenna's, who talked about the time wave zero, when the increase in novelty to the zero point in 2012. And all these things are coming together in kind of a collapse, or maybe it's an explosion in that's going to happen very quickly.
It is, and the kind of the like the government, you know, I guess they must be aware of all this, and they're trying to put it off as long as they can, which is why they're borrowing from our future at such a furious rate. You know, I think we spent out, we went into debt $185 billion in the last 2 weeks in America. And, you know, this is just astonishing to watch this.
That's what we know about.
So the Pentagon can't find any of their money.
Right.
You got to wonder where all that money goes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we know where it goes.
Well, we know.
Yeah, and so this is I don't know if you're aware of this book. You should probably have the authors on, The Fourth Turning. It's a great book. It was written in the 90s by two historians, Strauss and somebody else, and it predicts everything that's going on here in America, and it's about American history, and it says that every 85 years in America, there's a huge climatic change, and of course the Revolution, and then 85 years later was the Civil War, then 85 years later was the Great Depression, World War II, and guess what? We're 85 years later. And this also goes in with the orbit of, I think, Uranus, which is an 85-year orbit. And so there's some astrology at work here, too. But we are in, they predicted that by 2005, we would be in the beginning of the fourth turning, and that there would be an economic collapse. They predicted pretty much everything that's happened so far. And they say that, you know, this one is going to be the one. This is going to be the most serious event in U.S. history. And it's not going to end in 2012 or 2015. They say it's going to go to 2020, 2025, and America will not be anything like it was at the beginning. And a lot of historians poo-pooed the book and said, oh, yeah, right. But here we are, and they were absolutely right. So, you know, I entreat everyone to go out there and get that book and read it from the library or whatever, so that you can understand what's going on here. These jobs aren't coming back. None of this is coming back. We are facing unprecedented collapse here, and we have to be fearless. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're going to all end up slaves, even worse than we are now, to the powers that be. And we have to stand up to these people. I'm done with them. And I encourage everyone to do whatever they can nonviolently to stand up to these guys and say, that's it, we're done. You've had your day. It's over. And when we do that, you're going to watch. They're not going to shoot at us or jail us. They may, a few of us, but they're just too much of a cowards. There are too many cowards in there to actually fight us. And if we stand up, they will wither like a rose in a snowfall. And that's what I really want. I want us to stand up for ourselves. I want men to take their rightful place as the providers and to provide security for their families, which means we have to get these guys out of power, all of them. And we need to just say, no, we're not living the life that you guys have prescribed for us. And and when we do, we'll find that a lot of the pressures that are on us now economically and spiritually and materially will vanish.
Absolutely.
And that's what I'm after. I mean, at this point in my life, I'm, you know, getting into my late 50s, and I can see what's happening, and it's like we might as well just do it. We just as well do it. We got nothing to lose.
Right, right. Yeah, I turned 60 this year, so it's kind of like I've been, spending a lot of time detaching from the matrix, and I feel like I've done pretty good well at doing that. There's still a few quantum entanglements, but for the most part, I've detached. And it looks like we might be moving towards a moneyless society once people wake up and realize that we don't have to be slaves to the almighty dollar.
Well, that would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
yeah. The dollar is our God, and it says on it, "In God we trust."
It is.
And it is our God, and they've made it our God, and that's all you live for. Your church is your bank, and it's your temple, and even banks look like temples.
And this
whole thing has just got to end.
We're being
ruled by what they call in India the Vaishya, which is the merchant class, which is kind of it's kind of the seediest of the castes in India, and it's the least spiritual of the four castes.
Oh, absolutely.
And we're being ruled by them. That's who rules this country, and their God is money, and they only worship that God, and there is nothing else, and they're kind of spineless males who believe that security is found through how much money they have and how big their house is, and this is actually an anti-male point of view. Males are not into collecting matter and being proud of how much they own. Males are into the real males are into protecting their families and caring for their children and things, and not into this. So we've kind of created we've let the most perverse class or caste of all rule us, and we are now all in their game of the merchant class, of trying to make as much money as we can. And that's fatal error, a fatal error.
Well, they would like us to believe that. And, of course, they implant memes all over the place to get us to believe that, including the power of the church. And, you know, I mean, as you know, these control systems are vast and powerful, but they're top-heavy. And David Icke talks about this. If you have a pyramid of people that are held up by the people at the bottom and someone sneezes, well, the top falls. So, you know, it might not take so many people to topple the people or the entities, whatever they are.
I don't think it will. I really don't. And I go back to this thing where they must be rather spineless because of the way they do things in secret.
In secret.
Yeah. So we know that they're cowards by
right.
their actions. They are cowards.
Absolutely.
And we know that cowards are the easiest people to defeat.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I say rise up. Don't do anything violent because that's what they want. Fight
right.
asymmetrically. Don't hate them. Love them to death. But
right.
we need to refuse to deal with their world anymore. And
exactly.
we just say, sorry, we're done. It was fun. You know, driving fast cars was really fun when you're young, and taking
right.
all the drugs that you guys gave us was really fun, and all that. But you know what? We're done with it, and we're
right.
pooped out.
Been there, done there.
Yeah, and I think America, especially Americans, are reaching what I call the fear fatigue level, where there's been so much fear
yeah.
on us that we're now kind of like, well, you know, I'm kind of tired of being afraid. It's like,
yeah.
I'm pooped.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that's another good thing. You know, it's
yes,
good
it
to
is.
Be tired of being afraid. And you
yeah,
want to know
tired
something?
Tired of being sold things at every turn.
Yeah, it's like, come
my
on.
God.
And it's all a phantasm.
Yeah.
The whole
oh,
thing
yeah.
is just a phantasm.
Yeah.
It's a fake economy.
Yeah.
It's fake a fake world. It's fake
yeah.
media, fake everything. The only thing that's
movie
real
stars.
In this whole world is food and water and love
yeah.
and,
yeah.
And they just bristle at that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you watch their TV shows, which fortunately I don't anymore,
right.
But even their movies outside of Avatar, and you can see that they don't even like love. Not really.
Yeah.
Everything's just kind of a grotesque manipulation.
Yes.
And I think we just, I'm so encouraged when I see, like, Newsweek magazine had to sell for $1. Now, that just really, that made me smile so much. I was so glad that Newsweek magazine was completely worthless. And I'm so glad that you know, nobody's watching television anymore. I just think
yes.
it's so great. And
yeah.
and the fact that the New York Times has to borrow $1 million a month just to stay in business, and the LA Times is filing Chapter 11. I just, man, what a great time to be alive. All these entities have been lying to us for 50 years. They're all dying. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Good riddance. Next, let's work on the school system.
Right.
That would be good. Let's start working on the school system. Let's get rid of the school system. Let's replace it with something that's spiritually based and, you know, not materially based, not teaching you how to make money, but
right.
teaching you how to think. And that's what we should be doing in our schools. And so I see the school systems losing all their money, and I cheer. And everybody thinks, you know, well, he's crazy, you know. But
yeah.
it's a good thing.
It is.
These are good things that are going on,
absolutely.
Not bad things. We just have to approach or take a different approach to how we look at it. And that's why I made Infinity was it starts with death and our fear of death. And if we can start working on that, then the rest of it will get easier and easier.
Yep.
And when I say no fear of death, I of course I fear the pain of death. I'm not lying, or I'm not going to lie. You know, I wouldn't want to suffer a long cancerous like Christopher Hitchens is going through right now. But you know, but the moment of death, I'm not worried about. I know that we're infinite creatures and that we go on after this. And so, you know, that's the other thing is alternative media. You know, Newsweek magazine sells for $1, a completely worthless piece of crap magazine, run by the CIA, by the way. And yet, you know, films like Infinity are doing quite well. You know, alternative radio shows and websites like, say, Rents.com are doing really well. Okay, they're getting more and more. Millions and millions of people are going to these sites. They're not going to Newsweek. They're not going to NewYorkTimes.com. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you mentioned something. Well, there's a couple of directions we could go, and one is that you mentioned going in towards organic and living things, and love, and so on and so forth. And you bring this out in your through the esoteric teachings that there are subtle realms that operate through organic systems, sound and light, and love, and frequencies, and tantra, and so on and so forth. That we can tune into, which elevate the spirit and actually lift us out of third-dimensional realities.
Well, yeah, that's right. And, you know, how that got started was I was thinking one day years and years ago, why the heck they don't put free, go pay a university, a good university, the teachers in the university, you know, some money, and then videotape their classes and then put them on TV, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so everybody could go to a university for free on television. Okay,
that's a
maybe
great idea.
But they never do it because Marshall McLuhan. It's a vast wasteland of manipulation.
Right, right.
So that's when I started Sacred Mysteries. I said, well, you know what? I have to do an end run. I'm not qualified, of course, to do a university, materialist university, but I am qualified to start a kind of a spiritual university on video. And so that's the route I took. And you know what? I still to this day can't figure out why the Obama's supposed to be a liberal. Why doesn't he tell Columbia University or something that we'll give you a couple million bucks and put out a whole course on the internet and TV, so people can go and learn how to do accounting and all these things for free? Immediately, the country would be uplifted, and people would have new skills, and they wouldn't be so afraid of the unknown. But they never do it. They never do it.
Yes, and we both know that relates to what we're talking about. The powers that be are, you know, manipulating and controlling the reality that we're allowed to perceive.
That's right.
And that keeps us in subservience and fear. And then you turn up the fear button, and of course you've got a bunch of slaves. And if you microchip them, and so on and so forth, and genetically modify the food, blah blah blah.
Yep.
So you know it's an endless chain of ending up, you know, in the Matrix, literally, just as the movie. As batteries that are organic that are being milked by these machines.
That's right. And we don't need any of that stuff.
No.
That's the thing that, you know, you can cure illness with sound just by chanting. You can reconfigure the molecular structure of your body. This is what people did for you know, tens of thousands of years, and we've lost and let all these skills atrophy. And you know, that's really what Sacred Mysteries is trying to do, is trying to back engineer these ancient spiritual technologies so that we can, so when the collapse finally really comes, they can take these DVDs back into their communities and you know, learn new spiritual ways that will help their lives be better, and maybe even possibly realize that they don't. What's going to happen is after the end of this thing is over, and we're all living in communities and small rural communities and growing our own food and talking to our neighbors and playing music around the fire and all that.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to go, wow, what were we thinking about? Jeez.
Yeah.
This is like so much better than that.
Oh, yeah.
And then the kids won't be fat anymore, and they won't be, the trans fats will be gone, and and the whole society will be reinvigorated. And these archons, these parasites at the top, don't want this to happen.
Right.
And I'm not angry at them. I'm tired of them.
Right.
And that's the difference between me and an angry person. I'm just really tired of them. And I think we should, one thing we should do is, I think we ought to all just collectively start laughing every time they say something.
Yeah.
That would be great.
I like that.
Yeah, everybody just bull over and laugh and just keep laughing. And as they keep talking, you know, Obama or the right wingers or Fox News, just laugh and laugh. You guys are so out of touch.
Look at Jon Stewart's show and Colbert Report. You know, they just rip the edifice right off in such a funny way. And all you can do is laugh, and it reminds you of this parable about the emperor and with no clothes.
Yep.
Well, you know, they're beginning to be so ludicrous and so obvious that you can only laugh.
It is. It's true. It's like, my God, do they know how obvious we're being?
A bunch of alcoholic, greedy, old, jaded, cigar-smoking pals, you know, in the patriarchy, you know, that's just been handed down, and they don't realize that things have changed, the energies have shifted, and there's new kids on the block. You know, there's the various kids that are being born now that are much more awake and aware. There's a story about a little girl that was, I think, 8 or 11, and she grew this huge cabbage. Well, she donated it to the soup kitchen. Well, that seeded a whole cottage industry, and she now feeds thousands of people, and she's become this hub of, you know, of giving, free giving, and growing food for the hungry.
That's a great story.
Yeah, and this is happening all over the world, but we're not hearing about it.
Oh, no, they don't tell us those stories.
No.
It's like, remember the big floods in Tennessee this year?
Yeah.
Okay, you didn't hear much about that story.
No.
You know why? Because those people all took care of it themselves.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they helped each other. They pulled each other out of the mud. They put people in their own homes that could, you know, when their homes got destroyed, and the government didn't rush in to save anybody. They didn't have to because they were, so we're not going to pay attention to that story. People taking care of themselves, and my God, we got to stop that kind of behavior right away. You know?
When sooner or later people are just going to turn off the TV set and the news will just collapse on itself.
Well, they are. I mean, it's astonishing. I keep track of all this stuff, they're not watching TV anymore. I mean,
no. Uh-huh.
There was 1.3 months ago, there was a Tuesday night, and there was 25,000 people approximately watching CNN. Now, you know,
25,000 too many.
It is.
If all those people went out and looked for something in their immediate environment that was synchronous with their own life, that where they could help, boom, the world would be transformed instantly.
Yeah, I agree. I call CNN C, no news.
Right. Really.
And it's true.
Fox in the hen house news, you know. I mean, they tell you. The verbiage, the memes are obvious if you start thinking about it.
It's incredible and it's enervating, but we have to be ready for them. You know, there's nothing worse than a cornered vicious dog, and even a little dog can be really vicious in a corner. And even though these are little spineless guys who are using the military and these macho men to enforce their little spineless existence, they're gonna do funny and terrible things. And if these guys attack Iran, which it sounds like it's going to happen, I don't know. At that point, I think maybe we ought to maybe consider starting some trials.
Well, you know, it may not be necessary because I see the soldiers starting to revolt because
they're
scared. I do
too.
Care.
Yeah.
They're waking up and they're realizing that the Kissingers of the world and the people from the CFR and all those other three-letter agencies really don't give a rat's ass about any of them. This is all a game of pawns and manipulation, and they have fun playing it.
Well, you know, every time in American history that the soldiers come home after a war, there's mysterious mass deaths and diseases that sweep through the veteran populations. I don't know if you've noticed that after World War One, Vietnam, there was Agent Orange, which we may not even have been Agent Orange. Who knows what it was?
Who knows?
And then the Gulf War, right? The Gulf War illness. And I think that they realized that they, you know, created these warriors who could actually rebel against them, and they're taking care of business when they get home. And these guys here coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan, well, they've already been targeted by Homeland Security as being possible terrorists.
Absolutely.
And for what reason? I have no idea. Most of these guys are so busted up that I know they couldn't start a revolution if they wanted to. They're missing their legs and they can't hear. And it's just terrible what they've done to those people.
You know, and it's so refreshing, too, to hear one of your the people on your video, Infinity, Daniel Brinkley, who goes into those places.
Yes, he does.
He has been a tireless worker for veterans, and he goes in and tells them what is coming in the near-death experience, what they'll go through, and he can prepare them in a matter of minutes, maybe an hour.
No, he's there when they die. He's been with thousands of guys when they die. And these are people that the government doesn't care about. That's basically it. They're alone. Their lives are shattered from their time in service. And and there's nobody there in these VA hospitals to comfort them when they're dying.
And
he's a great guy. I just love Daniel.
People still put their flags out and sing about apple pie and barbecues and beer. And they don't seem to make the connection. It's the disconnect of the reality. And I think that the reality is starting to emerge so strongly that people will no longer be able to delude themselves into thinking that there's some kind of patriotic fervor that they can be, rallied around anymore. They're just tired. And
they
know that this is all a lie and a sham, and it's just that the truth is that the kids are coming back maimed and broken. You know, and the love has to come out. We have to love one another, and that's the part that the powers that be don't want us to do. They don't want us to care.
No, they don't. Then that's because they don't care.
That's right.
And they're trying to make us like them.
Yeah.
And, that gives rise to people like David Icke, who thinks that we're being, like, invaded by an alien race, because what kind of human could live and not care?
That's
You know, because that is the number one instinct of the human being, and we're not authentically human anymore.
That's right.
And that's what we need to retrieve. We need to retrieve this authentic human. What is a human? You know, a human isn't a slave. A human isn't somebody that works 16 hours a day.
Right.
A human is a person who loves music and children and forests and waterfalls and
And connected to nature and forest and each other.
And it's just gone so far out of whack that it's going to be a very, very, very violent collision of reality. And it's coming, and it's here, actually, right now.
It is.
And, the crazy people in the government telling us that the economy is getting better, I mean, that's when you bowl over laughing. Obama telling us that this is a summer of recovery. We should have all just fallen on the floor laughing our asses off that someone would even attempt to say something like that. There's so much unemployment, many people out of work, but the starvation hasn't started yet because they've been able to assuage it with the unemployment, but now that's coming to
an end. My dad went through the Great Depression, and and you know, when I was a little kid, I can remember this as far back, he and his friends used to talk about the Bilderbergs.
Yeah.
So I was raised long before David Icke or any of these other people talked about it, or Alex Jones, knowing about the Bilderbergs.
Yeah.
And of course, the last few years, it's all come into play.
Disturbing, actually, that suddenly the media is reporting on the Bilderbergers.
Yeah.
It's like, why are they doing that? You know, I thought there was a big secret.
Yeah.
You know, but no, the media now know. You see, the media is so useless. It's just really pretty much been proven that they're useless. And, you know, it's been going on for a long time. They covered up the Kennedy assassination and on and on. But you're right. This is going to leave, unless we face what's going on in a deeply spiritual way, we're all going to be emotionally scarred for the rest of our lives, as are our children will be.
Yeah.
That's why we need to say, no, I don't feel bad because I don't have any money, because money isn't all that important.
Right.
So quit judging yourself by the fact that you don't have a job.
Exactly.
Jobs are terrible. A job is a terrible thing to have.
I tell people to quit their jobs.
Absolutely.
You know, when
get your kids out
my
of
job,
school.
Walk out. Don't stay there another minute.
Exactly.
On your feet.
Yeah,
Test
exactly.
yourself.
But you know, the fear is what is governing.
And, that's what I love about your films and all the work you do, is because you're just hit right, you punch right at the through the hole through all the belief systems, and the biggest one is our fear and our fear of death, and you know, that's just a big blow to keeping us controlled and enslaved.
I have to say, though, I was a little disappointed when I saw your email about this show go out and you called me controversial.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah.
I've never been called that in my whole life, so. No, you know, this is what it's about, and we're now the elders, people like us, who went through the 60s, and we didn't have in the 60s, you know, we really didn't have anybody to hold, you know, Timothy Leary and Hugh Hefner are not exactly great role models, so we really, I mean, Tim was a great guy, but he was just a party animal, and we really didn't have anybody to teach us deep spiritual things, except that's why we had to go to India and things, and, but now we're here.
Around.
We're here.
Well, we're here. Yes, we are the ones we've been waiting for.
Yeah, and we're here. That's right, and we now owe it to the world, because you know what? Our generation had a pretty damn easy life compared to what's coming.
Yeah.
So we owe it to the world
to
impart this information before this world collapses.
That's right. Yeah, I'm totally aligned with that, and that's why I do this show.
Yeah, I know, and you know, and that's why I come on this show, because I'm like, you know, somebody's got to say something here.
I know. Have you watched Max Kaiser at all? Kaiser Report. He's been terrific.
Is that on the internet?
Yes.
Oh, I'll watch it.
Go to MaxKaiser.com, because he just rips the economy. I mean, he was an insider helping create the programs that helped Wall Street do the dirty things that they do. And he has a show on that just will make you laugh your socks off.
Good.
He has guests on that are, you know, around the world talking about the global economy and what a sham it is, and how the trillions of dollars that are going on. But he just says it kind of with a straight face, and he looks at the camera and raises his eyebrow. You'll see when you watch his videos.
I will.
He's good.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a phantasm, and we fall into the phantasm. The religions are phantasms. The economy is a phantasm.
Yep.
Business is a phantasm.
Politics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the whole thing. Military. The secret, you know.
Everything.
All of those secret bases with guns and all that stuff. Well, you know what? I have let that go, because they can have their secrets. They can have their secret space programs that are going to other planets right now, with bases that are on the moon and Mars and other places. Their technology with time travel. Screw them. You know, we can live without all that stuff, and we can live better, and we will, because we just need to let that stuff go and cut them loose.
Actually, I hope they go and don't come back.
Oh, I do too.
It's well, like, you go, did say good riddance.
You did say on one of my shows that the Aryans were getting out of Dodge, and I just pray to God that you're right, that they get in their little red wagons and ride that.
We should be like the stern mother pointing at Mars and going, go, get out of here.
Yeah.
You're bad boys.
Really, we are the mature caretakers of this planet. We're not so mature, but we have to step up to our responsibility for her. And we've been derailed for a few thousand years. Let's just admit that and get over it.
We have to get rid of the. I know this is very controversial, but we have to get rid of these religions.
People have
to realize that these religions are false.
Yes.
There's a great book out right now, big, huge book I recommend to anyone who's breathing, to read The Invention of the Jewish People by Shlomo Sand, a professor of history at Tel Aviv University, in which he proves that there was no Moses, no Solomon, no David. It was all made up so that they had a culture that could compete with the Greeks.
Yeah.
So then you look and you realize that both Christianity and Islam are, you know, children of this. Then you realize, my God, the whole thing is just a fraud. It's
right.
a huge fraud to keep
right.
us enslaved in a monotheistic culture
yep.
in which there's some off-planet god who
yep.
you know doesn't like nature and
yep.
just makes nature is just prickly things and horrible and,
yep.
and Adam and Eve are banished to go out into nature because they dared to eat from the fruit of the tree of knowledge, and you realize what kind of god would outlaw you from eating the fruit of the tree of knowledge. Is that
That's
a guy
right.
you really want to have be your God? And,
yeah.
And he's not God. He's this false God. And it's, we've just got to get over this one. And when we get over that one and the fact that you have to make money to be somebody,
That's just got to go. You know, one of my guests that's coming up is Michael Tellinger, and he wrote a book called Slave Species of God, and he documents all of this stuff that goes back, you know, several hundred thousand years, and how man was created and how these gods, quote unquote, these gods with a small g, actually literally controlled us, and how their offshoots were bred with reptilians and this one and that
one.
And so there are reasons why there are cold-blooded people and why things are the way they are. And once you connect the dots, even if it's just a story, it's a very comprehensive story, and it helps us to make connections to our true history.
Well, you know, this is even they are writing books about themselves now. There's a book called The Dragon Legacy by Prince Devere, which he just comes right out and says, "Yeah, we're reptiles, we're dragons, we're vampires, and we're superior, and you're inferior." I mean, I'm reading this book and my jaw is like on the ground. I'm reading this, and he's very proud that he's a reptile, and the ruling class is all reptiles. So, I mean, they're bragging about it now.
Yes. Well,
and that is curious, if nothing else.
And isn't it interesting how how Hollywood has come out with so many alluring vampire tales?
Yeah, because the vampires have taken over Hollywood, and they're trying to make kids into vampires.
That's right.
And there's actually kids running around biting each other and doing terrible things.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to say it right here and now. The people that make films making vampires into cool creatures, that's criminal. That's spiritually criminal. That is a crime against man's spiritual nature.
That's
and it is actually an assault on us. And to my point of view, those films, to even think of making them is one thing, but it's awful what's going on right now in that department.
Absolutely. Speaking of films, I wanted to ask you if you've seen the film Inception yet.
Yes, I have.
What did you think of it?
Well, I thought it was good. I think he was trying to be a little bit Matrix-y, but I thought it was good. I liked the idea of being able to implant an idea into someone's head, which I know they're doing.
Yeah.
And I always wondered how they were doing it.
Right. This kind of gives you a little insight into how that might work.
Yeah, and so
I love
that.
The idea that love really does prevail, and that you have to let go of the illusion before you can have the reality.
And also how you can fall for the dream as being real, so real that you want to, kill yourself.
Yes.
And this is, I'll tell you, I worry about that and these kids with video games and what happens if there's an EMP from a solar flare and all the electricity goes out and all of a sudden these kids don't have their fix. And
it's going to be spooky.
Well, you know, this could happen, by the way. This is one thing that people don't realize. In 1859, a solar flare hit the Earth and created an electromagnetic pulse, which destroyed all the telegraph wires on Earth, and they all had to be rewired.
I didn't know that.
And they say every 200 years or so this happens. So we're long for it here, and if it happens, we ain't got just telegraph wires.
Really? Well, isn't it interesting that 2012 is supposed to be the time of the maximum solar flares and EMPs?
Well, it's not just that. It's that for the first time in, I don't know, I think since we've been watching, the part of the sun where the hydro flares and the X-class flares emit from, the little section, cross-section slice of the sun will be pointed right at the Earth. And that's what's really amazing. And so, I mean, it may be since 1859, because we really couldn't watch solar flare activity much because until we learned how to block out the inner part of the sun and look at the corona. So what's going on is that this part is pointed right at us, and even if it was a minor flare, we could be 6th century B.C. in a blink of an eye.
Well, that would be a blessing in disguise.
No, it would be. There would be a lot of death, however.
As you said in your movie, there is no death. So we don't have to be afraid of death.
No.
Once we get over our fear of death,
it frees us up to
look at what's going on, and also that there are consequences to our actions. One of the things that Renata said that I thought was brilliant was she asked about, let me get my glasses on here, she asked about what happened to Hitler, because she was in the Jewish Holocaust.
Yeah.
She asked on the other side, well, what happens to all of these people who are evil? And the response was, well, they just have to grow. They're young souls.
Yeah.
And then she says, well, how did they learn? And they said, they learned by becoming what they hated.
That is just... That should be emblazoned on the walls of every home. You become what you hate. Yeah. And then you understand why Israel treats the Palestinians so badly, because they had it done to them.
Yeah.
And this kind of thing, the psychopathic relationship is contagious.
Yeah.
And so everyone's becoming what they hate. So if you hate something,
yeah,
examine your life and look at what really you hate, and then embrace it.
Yeah.
You know,
invariably it's something within ourselves that is a reflection that we have not been able to incorporate within. So, as you know through your spiritual cinema series, the Sacred Cinema series, and all the research that you and Sharon do and the wonderful work, it's an inside job, and it's a hidden or concealed or esoteric work, and we are the ongoing works in process. We are the living books of life. That have become disconnected from nature and need to reconnect with one another and with the source of all that is.
You know, it sounds like a great T-shirt. Transformation is an inside job.
Oh, we love it. There you go. There's a $1 million industry right there. We just created one, and if money's worthless, well, you know.
It is.
Well, Jay, we're reaching the end of the hour. My God, I could talk to you for another hour or two easily. Before we go, anything that you'd like to share with us, at the end of the show, and also your website.
Yeah, go to sacredmysteries.com for Infinity and our new Qigong film and our new John Lash film, Planetary Tantra film.
Get that one.
Yeah, I'll send that to you. I want to just say that we have a new film coming out, Kubrick's Odyssey, which is an examination of the films of Stanley Kubrick.
Yes.
That will be a mind blower, I can assure you.
I have
found things that are absolutely stunning.
Oh, my God, I can't wait.
Yeah.
You know, and I hope, people go to your site, jaywidener.com, because you have articles that you've written about Kubrick's work, Alchemical Kubrick, and on Tolkien and the rest of it that are just, like you said, mind-blowing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, jaywidener.com, sacredmysteries.com. Look for Kubrick's Odyssey. It's going to be the movie that does in the establishment.
Wonderful.
Yep.
Well, Jay, this has been just a terrific fireside chat talking to you, and I just can't thank you enough. Keep up the great work and come back soon.
Thanks, Lance.
All right. Good night, everybody.